If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health and need help right away, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Recorded in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Infamous Indie Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Melillo. This show features real-life stories of Indiana's most infamous horrors, Circle City serial killers, and crimes, both current and cold. I sit down and interview people who know these crimes the best. Sometimes they're authors, sometimes law enforcement, and even family members of the victims. In the end, you'll see a darker side of Hoosier hospitality. Indiana's suicide rate has been higher than the national average since 1999. According to the 2009 Indiana Youth Risk Behavior Survey, 22% of girls and 12% of boys surveyed in grades 9 through 12 seriously considered attempting suicide in the last year. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for Hoosier teens. Suicide is a crime in some parts of the world. However, suicide has been decriminalized in Western countries like Canada and the United States. The act is still stigmatized and discouraged. Even the phrase committed suicide refers to the stigma of a crime. We talk about suicide a lot when we talk about crime here on Infamous Indie. Whether it's a murder-suicide case or someone who has lost a grip on their mental health and they took the life of someone else and then themselves because they don't want to live anymore. As you heard from my statistics, this is a real problem in the world. So that's why I'm talking about this subject today. Today, I talked to Kennedy Harris. She attempted suicide while she was a student at Butler University. But she is using that experience to change the lives of everyone she meets. I'm so happy that she was able to be a part of the show and I could share her story. Now, you can't say that Infamous Indy is all bad news. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the interview portion of the Infamous Indie Podcast. And sitting across from me today is Kennedy Harris. Kennedy is someone who has attempted suicide, and we're here to talk about suicide awareness, prevention awareness. And I did a little research, Kennedy, before we started our interview, and you know, honestly, this is something that is not as talked about as you would think. And how many people a day attempt suicide is a huge, staggering number. You know, we here on Infamous Indie, we like to do things a little bit differently. I like to give voices to people who maybe don't have a voice usually on these subjects. We never really covered suicide before as a reporter because the thought is we talk about it and it causes it maybe put someone over the edge to want to try to attempt it. Mm. That's kind of the process that I've always thought about when it came to suicide for the last 10 years of my life. You're doing something different and you're talking about it more and more and more. And let's go over your story because you have a very specific story in the sense of why you attempted suicide. And also, people believe it's a crime. People have thought about it as a crime for years and years and years, and some people are surprised to learn it's not a crime. And you can kind of speak to that a little bit as well. But thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate it. And you have a great business we'll talk about as well.
Yeah, awesome.
But thank you. Just introduce yourself and let's start talking about your story.
Yeah. So my name's Kennedy. I graduated from Butler University in May of 2019. So while I was there, I had experienced some mental health issues that I never really had before. So it was kind of a wake-up call. And luckily I had the resources there to get the help that I needed. But now I kind of just share my story. And I thought it was interesting you said that a lot of people are scared to talk about suicide or mental health because they're scared that it's going to trigger someone. And that's actually a very common myth that most people don't know.
So it is a myth.
It is. Yeah. So it's actually proven. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has done research and have proven that the more you talk about it, the more you destigmatize it. And so that's why I'm really open about sharing my story, because you never know who's going to hear it and be impacted by that to get the help that they need. So it won't trigger people over the edge. If anything, it'll get them the help that they need. So
let's talk about where you started, because you grew up a normal life, I'm assuming. Tell everybody where you grew up, how you grew up as a kid, elementary school, middle school. Were you starting to see some of the stuff that you really came to fruition later on?
Yeah. So I would say normal-ish growing up. You know, no family is ever truly normal. I grew up in Noblesville, Indiana, and I was in a family of four. And then when I was about 1 year old, my aunt actually died in a car crash, and we adopted her for three brothers. Oh my gosh.
No, your three adopted brothers.
Yes. Yeah. Three adopted brothers and one adopted sister.
They're your cousins.
Yeah. So they're my cousins. So it's been like that my whole life. So really, I never was a family of four. It's always been a family of eight. And it was crazy growing up, because we are all within 4 years apart, all six kids. So we all were in high school together. We were all in elementary school together. I was the five out of six, but my younger brother is only 20 hours younger. He's adopted, though, so we're not twins. Everyone always asks that. So, by the time my brother and I were going through high school, all the teachers were like, oh my gosh, are we almost done with the Harrises? I'm so tired of you all. But yeah, pretty normal life. Played soccer, ran cross country and track, was a straight A student, never really thought about mental health, or never even knew if that was something that ran in my family, or never knew anything about mental health. No one talked about it ever. And then
what did mental health mean to you back then?
Honestly, nothing. Like, I didn't know anything about it. Like, if someone said mental health, I wouldn't have known. The only thing I knew about mental health is I distinctly remember hearing about like depression, and like in the news at the time, everyone said that like everyone has depression, like they're over like diagnosing it, and like everyone takes medication for it, and it kind of had this like bad stigma. I was like, well, I'm never going to do that then. Like, I'm never going to take medication for depression. I don't want to be another person that just has it. That's the only thing I ever knew about it. So
yeah, that maybe can be a good thing, but also it means that something that we're not talking about it is not much, maybe in the younger generation. Well, did you ever run into suicide when you were younger growing up?
No, never.
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of similar here. Also, sometimes people just didn't talk about it. If it was suicide, it maybe didn't get talked about as suicide, but yeah. You know, it's happening around us, and we just don't really pay attention to it. So maybe we can bring a little bit of awareness. So, okay, you go to Butler, right? You're a freshman and sophomore at mm-hmm. Butler University. What was your freshman year like? What was your sophomore year like? And then ultimately, when we get to the point where you try to kill yourself, what was going through your head? I'm very interested to hear, was it a progression? Was it a moment where you're just like, I can't do it? Kind of go into it.
Yeah. So I would say the first time I ever had an anxiety attack was the end of my senior year of high school. I didn't know what it really was at the time. I kind of just was experiencing it. And then later on, when I learned about mental health, I kind of was like, oh, wow, this started way sooner than like I really thought. But anyway, kind of went into freshman year of college super excited. I was ready to make a new set of friends, go to college, go to my dream school, pursue. I was actually a biology and neuroscience major and minor, so I was ready to pursue my dreams, go after physician assistant, graduate school, all this stuff. I'm someone that has like huge ambitious goals. And I was ready to tackle them. So freshman year was amazing, like probably one of the best years of my life. I had some great friends, would go out on the weekends, you know, classic college student. But my grades weren't what I was used to. College is a lot harder than high school, and they didn't really prep me for that. I thought, hey, I was like, I got 100% in high school bio. Like, I can do a bio major in college. Not the same thing. So I think that kind of played a role in it. Honestly, a lot of different things. Just things stack up and get you to the level where you just have all this pain. And I was scared to talk to people about it. I didn't want to be a burden on someone. I didn't want people to think of me different. So as I would say freshman year is pretty good. And then once sophomore year hit, everything started building up. There's not one thing that it was. It wasn't just grades. It wasn't just that I was looking at myself different. It was just like a mix of friendships failing or not doing well on a test or just my home life wasn't great, and all these kind of things just added up. And by the time I got to the end of my or the end of the year, mm-hmm. my sophomore year, I just had a breaking point, and I didn't want to die. That's the big thing. I wanted to live, but I didn't want to live with the pain that I had. And when you're in that state, or at least for me, like, that was the only route out, was to kill myself. Like, I didn't see any other way to escape the pain. So that's kind of ultimately what led me to that really bad state, and I had no way out other than that.
Thanks for sharing. We really appreciate this. This is not easy, everyone. I mean, anybody who's listening understands what Kennedy has to go through in order to relive this, but especially me, I just really appreciate your strength on this. But let's get through this. Let's keep going, because that we're going to get to the good part. We're going to get to the part where, you know, she's living a full life now and loving everything about it from what we can tell. You couldn't do it anymore. Had you contemplated it prior to attempting?
Yeah. Definitely had always been back and forth on it. But there was always something that kind of like saved me in the moment. And then I got in this stupid, stupid fight with someone. And that kind of was the tipping point. I remember telling him, like, don't worry, like, I won't be a burden anymore. Like, you won't have to worry about me anymore. And just, like, repeating stuff like that. And then that night, that's when I kind of took action in my own hands.
And for the record, or how did you do that?
So that's one thing about attempting. You actually don't want to talk about actions. That way, it doesn't give anyone else any like ideas or things like that. So I'm not going to share any details, but
perfect. I mean, this is why we're here, to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
There is that stigma of like talking about it could trigger somebody, but you're saying even talking about specifics could trigger someone even more. So thank you for sharing. And so, were you hospitalized? Were you found? What happened after you attempted?
Yeah. It was probably a little different than some people have experienced. I luckily was found at like the perfect time. I still don't understand how it even happened, but basically it was just a normal Saturday night, and my friends were all like, oh, are you coming out? And I said, no, I'm going to stay in tonight. They could all tell something was off, but they just thought maybe I needed some space. And later that night, my boyfriend and my friends could just tell something was just not right, and ended up coming into my room at just the perfect time. So really lucky for that. But after that, I talked with a lot of the police department against kind of my will. I know my friends kind of reported it out of, you know, love and concern for me. But I remember being so angry at them for doing that. But it's really what I did need. They put me into therapy, which, again, was not happy about. I did not want to be there. Because at the time, mental health was still kind of stigmatized to me. Like, I at that point, I didn't think that, like it was okay to have these kind of feelings and that people would judge me for going to therapy. I was so embarrassed to, like, walk into the therapy room and see other people and, like, being like, what if they recognize me? What are they going to think about me? All this kind of stuff, which is so dumb thinking back.
It's not dumb. It's just reality. And this is maybe the stigma that we have to break through. Would you say that the police, what did the police say to you? Because, again, there's this thought that committing suicide, right? Someone commits suicide. The terminology you were explaining to me a little bit, but could you tell it to my viewers or listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of times, and I even sometimes out of habit say committed suicide. And now being in the mental health field, that's just one thing like we like to educate people on. So the reason it used to be committed suicide is because if you went through suicide, it technically was illegal, which is kind of silly because you're no longer here. So what are they going to do? But it was like illegal to do. And so that's why it was committed. You're committing a crime. And I honestly don't know the specifics of when that didn't happen or got reversed, I guess, but it's no longer a crime to die by suicide. So just changing the terminology helps a lot of people kind of it just destigmatizes it a little bit. And instead, like, if someone said that, like, what I almost did was a crime, I would be so scared to tell anyone. I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm a criminal, like, think so badly about myself, which I already thought so badly about myself, so it wasn't a good idea to, like, even make it even worse. So we try to say when someone dies by suicide, you say, like, die by suicide or attempted suicide or things of that sort. Just another way to kind of re-educate people and change the stigma around it.
A lot of the crimes that we cover are crimes that people commit suicide and then try to kill somebody else while doing it, maybe a murder suicide or it's something to that effect. So I'm not saying, you know, that you're feeling that way, but this was a serious thing, and you can see someone taking both actions differently, you know, either killing yourself or killing someone that you love and yourself. So paying attention to signs and people's reaction to things and how you say things and, like you said, you were saying certain things right before, like, oh, you won't have to worry about me anymore. I'm not going to be a burden anymore, which seemed to be something you were hitting on as you were getting closer to the moment. What have you learned through your mental health studies should someone do? What can we do as a society to make sure that we're protecting everyone?
Yeah, we just need to be more aware of the warning signs. When I was going through this, I thought I was screaming I needed help. I thought that I was saying, like, someone help me. And looking back, I wasn't. I was so subtly dropping hints here and there, but no one caught on to them. Or if they did, they kind of just turned a shoulder and said, it's probably nothing. I'm sure someone else will help. And that's a huge thing. Like, don't stand back, like, help someone, reach out. The worst thing is you say, hey, are you doing okay? And they're like, yeah, I'm fine. You asking them will not hurt them. If they are experiencing that, it will just...
So maybe more pointative questions. Maybe not just like, are you doing okay? Because to us, or you know, it sounds like we're asking, we're doing our job, we're saying, hey, are you okay? But is there something else that people can say that's maybe more pointative?
Yeah. And this is something that can be super uncomfortable at first, but just asking, are you contemplating suicide? Sounds so simple.
Oh my
but
gosh.
Just asking, Are you? Like, hey, I've noticed you're a little off lately. Are you contemplating suicide? Just asking them that can save their lives.
But to your point, wouldn't that put me on the defensive and want to lie right away and say, no, because there's a stigma?
There is that stigma, but most likely they've never had someone even ask that. Mm. And all you really need, not everyone, but all I needed was someone to reach out and show me that I was worth another day and that, like, I knew people loved me. I did, but I couldn't see it. So if someone had asked me that point blank, I might have denied it at first, but I definitely would have thought internally a little bit more about it, and I probably would have reached out for help.
Did you ever think, like, this is a huge thing for me, is leaving your loved ones behind? Was that ever a thought that you went through that helped stop you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard thing because a lot of people think that when you die by suicide, that it's a selfish act. And honestly, like, in my mind, I was thinking the opposite. I was like, I'm doing them a favor by, like, lifting this burden off of them. Like, I truly thought that I was such a burden to everyone that their lives would be better without me, which is so, so crazy because, like, I know now that, like, I would have, like, destroyed some of their lives, and it would still to this day be so hard for them. So in that moment, like, you kind of just think that you're helping them. And now looking back, like, I know, like, there are people that care about you so, so deeply, no matter what your mind is telling you. Everyone has a group of people that love them so, so much and care about them so much. So it's hard to see in the moment. Mental health is crazy. Like, it literally is an imbalance of the chemicals in your brain. So your mind is telling you things that aren't true, and it's just trying to understand what's true and what's false.
That's a great perspective, and more importantly, also, you know, I appreciate you sharing. This is, you still have family that love and care for you even after all this learning, and it's clear you got a lot going on, and you know, it's not a crime, and it's not wrong to feel the way you're doing, you feel, and people just need to know that. I know I'm a crime podcast, but, you know, I talk about murder, suicides, and things like mental health all the time, and I think you're an unbelievable resource. You are doing something completely different now. From that moment, you've completely 180'd and changed your entire perspective on life, and I think we need to get into that now. That's more important than anything. We all have dark periods in our life, including myself. It's just a matter of what you do with those dark periods. Do you still live in them, or do you move past and make it better? And you're doing that for other people. And that's why we're here, because let's talk about what you are doing now to kind of change people's perspective. Obviously, you're going to school for mental health, or you're learning, or you learned a little bit more about mental health now. But let's talk about everything else you're doing, because it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So after my attempt, it took a while, but I finally got back on I guess, normal-ish path. Don't get me wrong, I still have mental health issues. It's never going to go away, but it's something that I control now through medication, number one, which is a whole nother story, but it took me forever to be okay with taking my medicine and therapy and stuff like that.
And also, like, figuring out the balance on your medication and therapy. You know, some people need more, some people need less, so I'm sure that was a struggle.
Yeah, or even the kind of medication. Like, I remember trying citalopram, and it was terrible for me personally.
Why?
I was super, super sick all the time. Didn't have an appetite.
Oh, you mean like vomiting sick or more? Okay.
Yeah. Like, I would feel like my stomach, I was going to throw up all the time. Even like, it was right when I turned 21 too. And so, like, even if I had one beer, I would feel like drunk, and I'm like, that's not normal. So it was just not the right medication for me, but I know some people have great success with it. So your bodies are all different. Now I'm on escitalopram, which is pretty similar, but it works wonders for me. So just finding the right balance, the right medication, what works for you, what doesn't. It's a process, but definitely worth it. And now I forget the original question.
No, that's okay. No, what about now, like you've learned perspective-wise over the, because now you're, how old, 20?
23.
23? Mm-hmm. But you've started a business on this perspective, on using your life experiences to help you run this business, and that's freaking awesome. Yeah, so let's tell everybody what you're doing.
Yeah. So I started a business in college my senior year, kind of by accident, honestly. I just did it for fun. My friends always saw how creative I was with writing out my planner, my like calendar. And they were like, hey, like, can you make me one? And I was like, I mean, why the heck not? And at the same time, I was co-president for an organization on campus that raised money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And I had set a very lofty goal, a personal goal to raise $5,000. And I was sitting there like, okay, how the heck am I going to raise $5,000 during my like busiest year? Because my senior year was not like other people's. I had just switched my major. I was working multiple jobs. So I was like, how the heck am I going to do this? So my friends were like, you should make me a planner. And I'm just the type of person that dives full into something when I'm passionate about it. And 2 seconds later, I kid you not, I was Googling how to start a business. And so that's how the planner started. So now I'm in my second year of it. And I sell planners, mainly in the US, but they've gone international as well. And I donate the profits back to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And they're just filled with resources to help people track their mental health, track their physical health, keep on track with their schedules and stuff like that.
Wow. And you draw them all. They're all hand drawn and all the quotes and stuff. Are you coming up with the quotes?
Yeah. So, yeah, all hand-drawn, which was crazy. I had to completely teach myself how to do all of that. But...
You're crazy. I
mean, yeah.
that's a lot of work. And
I've seen
some video of you actually doing it, and you're doing it digitally, like on an iPad of some sort. And,
yeah.
And then you upload it, and then you've made a few. It's not like you've made one, right?
So I make the original copy, and then luckily I can send it off to my like production people to print like in mass. But I mean, I had to draw all 200 pages, so it's a lot of work.
What are some of the quotes that you wrote into it?
Yeah, I try to keep them pretty generic and just full of hope. So maybe something like you start new each day, or like you are so loved, just different like little affirmations and reminders. So if someone opens their planner to that next week, that may be something that they really needed to hear from someone. And like
just maybe, happens to be you.
Yeah, exactly. Just happens to be me. One of those like fate things, you know, I don't know.
You said you've gone international at this point, but what other publicity have you gotten for the work that you're doing? And you give 20% back, right?
Yeah, 20%.
Which is a lot of money for a business to be giving back.
Especially a new business. it's a lot of money to be giving back. And my first year, which this was kind of dumb as a business perspective, but I gave 100% back. I didn't keep a penny, like not even one, to reinvest.
I'd say that's a bad business move.
Yeah, but so that's kind of why we've changed our model a little bit, so we can keep reinvesting and help more people. But what was the question?
Yeah, you've gone international, but the publicity. Where can people see some of the stuff? Obviously, Wish TV, but have you gotten any other publicity about it?
Not yet, honestly. It's still something I'm working on. All these things are kind of just happening by accident. This is kind of just my part-time gig, I guess. So really everything I invest in it, I'm just doing from like 7 p.m. to midnight. So it's kind of hard being the only one managing the social media, sending out packages. That's a huge one. I have to send out like 30 packages a day and process them and pack them up, ship them, all that stuff. So it's a lot of work unfortunately, I haven't had a lot of time to focus on like getting the message out. But we did just have that Wish TV interview, and that was so awesome to be able to share my story and the backbones of Live Inspired, and kind of spread the word, because word of mouth is the biggest form of advertisement for us.
Yeah, so Live Inspired is the name of the business.
Yeah.
You can go to Live Inspired.
ShopLiveInspired.com.
There you go, yeah. ShopLiveInspired.com.
Shop today.
Yeah, shop today. Go get your planner. Get it for your business. I'm sure there are a ton of businesses out there that would love the inspiration to be able to do a planner every day and be able to see the inspiration when they work.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm very impressed by your turnaround. Would you give advice to people who are struggling right now and don't know what to do, where to go? What's a step that people need to take if they're listening to this?
Yeah. If you're struggling, just know it's okay. Like, nobody is going, or at least nobody should, be judging you. And if they are, they're not the right people to have in your lives. Go talk to someone who's an expert. Even there's people out there that have been certified in detecting warning signs, myself included. So even other people out there that want to do something to help, even if you're not like a therapist or something like that, just go get certified to detect warning signs. I think everyone should have that.
So you can do that without being a therapist or?
Yeah, absolutely. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention puts on trainings. It's like a few hours of like a Saturday evening or morning, I guess, and you just get trained, and after that you're certified to kind of detect these warning signs, and they kind of go through like what to look for, who is at risk, which is everyone, by the way, and just like not looking for like a certain type of person. I know a lot of people would be like, oh, we're looking for the really quiet guy at school who has no friends and is isolated. No, like I had tons of friends, not to like toot my own horn or anything, but like I had friends. When people hear my story, almost always the reaction is, wait, you went through that? And it makes me laugh every time, because that just shows how like people view it. Like they think it is this one type of person, and it's not. It's anyone. You don't know what anyone is going through. Mental health is something entirely different. It's like any other illness or like a broken bone, but you can't see it, which makes it even harder. And people are so good at hiding it. I never showed it to anyone. So it is so, so hard. But finding almost everyone will have those little warning signs here and there. So just being trained on that is so, so important.
Can you give us some insight on that training? Maybe some basics that we can take away from today?
Yeah. So some really cool, or I guess some things to look for in your close friends or just someone random even, is if they drastically change their mood. So if you notice that they consistently keep being off, everyone has off days, but, you know, if it's consistent, if they dramatically change like their appearance, like maybe, I'm not saying everyone who gets a haircut is at risk, but that's a warning sign, or, giving away their possessions, or just saying things like I was saying earlier, when I was in that place, I was saying like, don't worry, like, this will be fixed soon. Like, you won't have to worry about it. Like, things like that really show that, those signs.
How about just another basic sign or another basic thing that, like you said, you gave us one really good one, which was, have you ever thought about attempting suicide before? Is there something else we can say?
Just talk to them. Like, straight up just talk, like, and listen. Listening is huge. Like, don't feel the need to try to relate to, like, don't be like, oh yeah, like one time I was feeling like, no, don't do that. Like, just listen to them. Let them have the moment to share what they're feeling, and just say, I'm here for you. Like, what do you need? What can I do? Everyone's different of what they kind of want next and what is healthy for them, but just be with them and check in on them often, very often. Like, don't be like, feel like you're going to be annoying or something. Like, just be there for them and check in and make sure you're there. And don't try not to like leave them alone for, you know, like a whole week or something without checking in. Make sure that they know that you are there and follow up on kind of what you tell them.
I love it. Kennedy, you're awesome.
Thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you.
You, again, everybody, shop.
Shopliveinspired.com.
Shopliveinspired.com.
Here, it's a great website.
It's an awesome website. You can also follow you on Instagram, right?
Yeah, at shopliveinspired. Super easy.
Yep. And then do you have any other social venues that people can get a hold of you?
Facebook, Shopliveinspired, I'm pretty sure it's called. You guys are always welcome to slide into my DMs. I have a lot of people kind of speaking up and sharing their stories with me, which I think is really awesome. So always here as a resource for anyone who may need it. But you can also email me if you ever need anything. My information's on the Instagram. But seriously, so happy to talk to anyone who ever needs someone and is scared to reach out to anyone else.
We talk again. This is like a really different I love, like, this is my podcast. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So, but this is, to me, this is inspiring. And we talk about it constantly. Mental health is such a big issue on crime things. This is an example of, you didn't take it to a crime perspective, but, and there's thought process that this is a crime to try to commit quote unquote suicide or attempt suicide is some sort of crime, and it's not, and you're putting that to bed today. So yeah. I really appreciate your time and effort. And, obviously, you know, if you got questions, folks, she's offering to reach out, but really you need to go reach out to someone professionally as well.
For sure.
That's key. I mean, we gotta make sure everybody understands if you're not feeling right, it's not a shameful thing anymore. We're not in the 1950s. Nobody needs to be dealing this with them by themselves.
Yeah.
Let's wake up, folks. Let's get some help and let's stop kind of the same problems that we've had over and over and over and over again over the last, you know, 50 years. Let's try to make a difference. So, Kennedy, at the end of every podcast, I always ask my guests to tell everybody to stay safe, but they can do it in their own way. You know, you can just kind of put a cherry on top for what we've just talked about, but that's how we end the podcast. So I'd really appreciate it if you could do it.
Yeah. So mentally, if you want to stay safe by just looking out for the people around you, and if you need help, and are in a crunch or in a crisis, always feel free to reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's just 1-800-273-8255. So don't be afraid to get help, and don't be afraid to reach out to the loved ones near you.
And stay safe, everybody. Thanks, Kennedy.
Stay safe.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Kennedy, and make sure to reach out and follow Kennedy wherever you can on social media. As for the updates, here we go. We are super pumped to continue to tell you about our Central State Studios live show coming up on April 18th at 3 o'clock at the famous Vogue Theater. Whoa, baby. We have already sold out at least half the show, and we're still 5 weeks away from the actual opening. So go to the Vogue's website to buy tickets or go to infamousindie.com to learn more. Also, the Infamous Indie Podcast Instagram page is a great place to go. And centralstatestudios.com, of course. Have a wonderful week, everyone, and make sure to always stay safe.